It's been nearly a year since pictures of prisoner abuse at Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison were made public. Since then, it's become clear that the problem went well beyond Abu Ghraib. There have been allegations of torture and abuse by American military personnel elsewhere in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. Some members of Congress and others have defended the interrogators, saying their job is to make subjects uncomfortable to get important national security information. NPR's Jackie Northam examines the difference between pressure and torture.
In 1971, Idi Amin seized power in Uganda. He immediately began rounding up people perceived to be opponents of his regime. One of those was Richard Okech. Some of his family members had been part of the former government. Okech was arrested 3 times by Amin's security forces and was taken to detention centers, where he received harsh treatment at the hands of his jailers.
They beat you, they knife you, they pierce you with the bayonets. People are playing with you like an animal, like a toy. They want you to dance in a certain way or something like that. And then if you don't do it right, they beat you up.
Okech says the worst thing was watching the guards kill other inmates.
In most cases, they were just slaughtered, just like goats. They mostly use daggers or knives. And then some people were cut up and left there.
Okech says he had to clean up the cells after the murders. He was, with the help of friends, able to escape. He left Uganda and made his way to America, ending up in Minneapolis. He says for years he was haunted by nightmares and other classic signs of post-traumatic stress syndrome, before finally receiving help at the Center for Victims of Torture. Okech's experience was more than 3 decades ago and far worse than any allegations made against American personnel. But since the Abu Ghraib prison scandal erupted in April of last year, rough treatment in military prisons has been the focus of media, Congress, and human rights groups. Some of the tactics used by the United States against suspected terrorists have been described as torture. Some actions are defended as legitimate interrogation techniques.
It's kind of like defining orange or defining obscenity.
Gary Solis, a professor at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, is an expert on the law of war. He says there are many conventions, treaties, and constitutional guarantees against torture. Solis says the most specific is the United Nations Convention Against Torture and other cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment or punishment. That convention, which was ratified by the U.S., says that torture means any act by which severe pain and suffering, either mental or physical, is intentionally inflicted. Solis says that doesn't fully explain what is severe suffering and what's intentional infliction. Solis uses an exercise on his students at West Point. He asks them, is it torture to put a hood on a detainee's head?
How about if we keep the hood on for 3 days? How about if we make the guy stand up for 24 hours? Is this torture? Is that torture? Is the next torture? And it's very inconclusive. And then I point out, put them all together, and they clearly are torture. So the question becomes, at what point do they in combination become torture? It's a very indistinct line.
Solis says he doesn't think there should be a sharp definition of torture, because a torturer would only have to come up with techniques not on an official list. But Ellen Dershowitz, a professor at Harvard Law School, says there need to be clear guidelines on torture. Dershowitz says interrogators need to know what is permissible and what is not.
When you torture somebody to death, that is, when you kill somebody and use grave pain as a way of aggravating the killing of that person, everybody would acknowledge that's torture. But placing a sterilized needle under somebody's fingernails for 15 minutes, causing excruciating pain but no permanent physical damage, is that torture?
But there's more than just physical damage. Allison Beckman is a clinical social worker and has worked at the Center for Victims of Torture for 5 years. Beckman says psychological torture can be much more damaging and stay with the victims longer than physical torture.
I worked with a client who every day he was blindfolded and lined up with a group of people with the threat that they would be shot. And some days people around him were shot, and other days no one was shot. He wasn't actually physically harmed in this happening. He has no scars from it, but he can't get that image out of his head.
Beckman says interrogators usually use the body to break down the mind. She says techniques such as forced nudity or sexual humiliation can slowly dehumanize the victim. The so-called stress and duress techniques, such as subjecting the detainee to many hours of loud noise, bright lights, or uncomfortable positions, can help to break down the personality of the prisoner, says Doug Johnson, the executive director of the Center for Victims of Torture.
When you flood the senses, it's almost the equivalent of completely depriving those senses. And those tend to loosen one's ties to one's personality and one's strengths and make people much more manipulable.
Larry Johnson, a former deputy director of the State Department's counterterrorism office, says he doesn't see a problem with psychological pressure to get someone to talk. Johnson says he took part in a CIA training course in 1985 that included an exercise in resisting interrogation. Johnson says towards the end of the course, they were taken hostage.
We were grabbed, bags put on our heads, ultimately strip searched, and then proceeded to stand for what seemed like an eternity, broken periodically by being taken in and having the bag ripped off your head, being questioned by people. We had information to protect.
Johnson says within 2 days, many in the group began to crack.
Even though you knew it was an exercise, people were treating it as if it was the real thing. And people started breaking, giving up information that they were supposed to protect. One of my friends, she gave me up for a ham sandwich and a grape knee-high.
Johnson admits that there was never any threat of violence and knew that the interrogators wouldn't hurt or kill him or his family. But he said the exercise showed that the stress and duress techniques worked. That's if the information given is correct. Many experts say a detainee will say anything just to stop the torture. Harvard Law School's Dershowitz says that's nonsense. He says any information has to be verified before a prisoner is released. Dershowitz says sometimes harsher tactics are justified to get that information, such as the ticking time bomb scenario.
The ticking time bomb or the ticking terrorist is somebody who is captured or whose associate is captured and who is likely to explode a bomb or a chemical bomb or something that could kill many, many people in a very, very short period of time. And the only way to prevent that from happening is by using extreme measures of interrogation.
West Point Law Professor Gary Solis says even that scenario doesn't justify inflicting pain on a prisoner. But Dershowitz asks, what is the line between permissible extreme interrogation and impermissible torture? He says that's the question the U.S. has not answered. Jackie Northam, NPR News, Washington.